a group called the Lower Phalen Creek Project advocated to restore the land.
Yeah, that was the first project the group took on, was to kind of like work with the Trust for Public Land to acquire the property and then turn it over to the City of St. Paul for public use. And then the restoration work began.
The area restored wetlands is now the Waukon Teepee Nature Sanctuary, 27 acres of floodplain forest, prairie grassland where an ancient oak savanna thrived. It is also a place Dakota communities used for ceremonial gatherings and to harvest food and plant medicines.
We do have a number of new teaching stone exhibits out in the sanctuary itself. Those teaching stones through these little audio, solar powered audio posts. And you can hear the stories in both Dakota and in English.
A long-awaited vision, Waukon Teepee Oweyakapi will be hosting their grand opening, the new intergenerational gathering place for the Indigenous communities and their allies, on May 29th, 2026.
We'll do the ribbon cutting and be able to enter the building. I'm really excited that we have some dancers who are going to be with us, who are going to kind of dance us into the building.
Learn more about Waukon Teepee at waukantipi.org. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Deanna Standing Cloud.
Next, we revisit an artist's work at Sherbourne National Wildlife Refuge's new amphitheater.
Buju, I'm Gige Agatone Housed. I am one of the artists that collaborated with the friends on the amphitheater art. Holly Young and I collaborated to create a Dakota and Ojibwe design that incorporates both the indigenous animals of this area, but also the animals that we would like to be returning to the area. We have an eagle, a crane, a bear, a turtle, and a deer, and then a bison. And they're all done in an Ojibwe style, what we call the X-ray style. Also, they have a thunderbolt through them, which represents their life force, but also that for us as Ojibwes, thunder is a gift, and these animals all bring gifts. They're all connected by a line, showing how we're all connected to each other. And then in the center is a traditional tobacco or sema plant that we use for prayer, and it's orientated in the four cardinal directions to really represent the idea of sending out our good thoughts, our good prayers, however you think of that, in all the directions. But we also wanted this space to be fun and functional so that kids could come here and be a space that people would feel comfortable using. I love the idea of creating really permanent places where we're telling Ojibwe and Dakota stories and really highlighting those stories. So I was all about it.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News.
Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Buju, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo. Today, we're revisiting my co-host and sister, Leah Lem's chat with Sharon Day. Sharon is enrolled with the Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe, and she serves as the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force. Sharon is also a grandmother, an artist, a musician, and writer, and she leads Water Walks, or Nibi Walks. I was unable to be a part of this particular show because my wife, Maria, had just given birth to our little boy, Artem. But it's a great episode with an amazing guest. Sharon is truly someone special and shares so much in the show. This episode originally aired in July of 2025. Enjoy.
You know, when somebody does something that we consider to be extraordinary, we think they had some epiphany or some spiritual something. And for me, it was, I want to walk the Mississippi River because it's a river I love. It's the main artery on Nemama Key, and I crisscrossed it every day for 40 years.
Buju, hello. Welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem. Miigwech for joining me today. Native Lights is more than a podcast and radio show. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week, we have great conversations with wonderful guests from a bunch of different backgrounds, musicians, artists, doctors, water walkers, educators, language warriors, you name it. We have a great mix of passions featured on this program. So we talk with our guests about their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community. And it all centers around the big point of purpose in our lives. And it's another opportunity to amplify Native voices. And as you can hear, I am a solo host today. I'm really excited for today's guest, Sharon Day. Sharon does Nibi walks or water walks. She's also the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force in Minneapolis. And today we'll focus on water walks and how the public can be more aware of the environment by practicing gratitude and spending more time outdoors. And just to say, you know, water is such a significant aspect of our lives. And it's one of those things we don't quite realize until we're without it. So our house in Grand Rapids, we have a well. And when the power goes out, well, that means no water pump. And that can be pretty inconvenient. In fact, I actually made a hotel reservation once during one of these longer power outages just so we could have running water and a restroom and all that good stuff. But, you know, Minnesota has so much water available to us, so many lakes and rivers and streams. And, well, I live right by the Prairie River here in Grand Rapids, and I get to wake up every morning and look out the bedroom window and see the water, the current of the water, and maybe even some wildlife if I'm lucky. Right now we got plenty of geese. I love it when the trumpeter swans come by. Sometimes it's a little territorial there with the geese and the swans, which is kind of fun to watch. But yeah, it's just lovely to be able to, you know, look out and look at water and just kind of feel a part of a larger ecosystem. And I believe my guest today, Sharon Day, kind of highlights that herself. So here's Sharon. Bonjour, Sharon.
Bonjour.
Nice to see you again. It's been a little while since we last chatted. Well, I will get started. Sharon, can you please introduce yourself?
Bonjour, Nanindawe, Maganidug, Nagamo, Mayengen, Indishnakaz, Wabashashian, Dodam, Ojibwe, Kwayendow. My name is in Ojibwe is Singing Wolf, and I'm from the Martin clan, and I'm an Ojibwe woman, two-spirit. Let's see. And my English name is Sharon Day.
Thank you. And how are you and the family doing?
We're doing fine.
Great. And before we get started on all the things that you do, because the list is long, is there anything that you are concentrating on or thinking about these days that's kind of sticking in your mind?
Well, you know, thinking a lot about climate change, the effects of climate change. I live on a farm. I've been here for about 6 years. And, you know, when you're close to the plants and in water or lack of it or too much of it, you really notice everything. For instance, this year, you know, we have pretty good water, you know, rain frequently. And so our plants are doing fairly well this year. This spring, we tapped the maple trees. We did not the year before because we had a 2-year drought. So we want to give the maples a little bit of a rest. But yeah, you pay more attention. And, you know, as I read about what's happening around the world, you know, we've been experiencing such bad air quality, smoke pollutants in the air from Canada, from the fires up there. And I have friends up in Saskatchewan who talk about, you know, the Canadian fire policy of letting it burn and how it's just really destroying their forests. So, you know, and then we got flooding in Texas and in New York City. So, you know, we have fires raging around the world and temperatures, extreme temperatures. And so I think a lot about climate change and, you know, what are we going to do about it? You know, how do we ensure that our grandchildren have a world that's fit for habitation? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those Canadian wildfires really reminds me how connected we are just through the air and close we end up being. Because I know up here, I live in northern Minnesota, you know, it gets pretty gray and pretty strong smell in the air. And I'm pretty sure it does in a lot of places too. And you mentioned, you know, what can we do about it? And I know you do the Nibby walks, the water walks. And you just mentioned, you know, how you are on a farm and like notice what's happening on the land. And so can you talk a little bit about how we can be even more aware of what's going on with, you know, changes and what's going on with the land, wherever we might be?
Yeah, I think just, you know, like if you step outside a little bit more often, then if you just stay in an office building all day and, you know, you have air conditioning on, you know, you only have to deal with that little bit of, you know, the air quality between your footsteps from your office door to your front door. Mm-hmm. But if you're working out in the field and you're breathing in that smoke, you know, like it really affects people. I have asthma. And so Saturday I went down to Prairie Island Powwow and had to wear a mask while I was outside. I mean, I didn't want it to stop me, but I did take the precaution of wearing a mask, and I didn't stay that long. But it was so beautiful to see all the dancers and all, you know, the relatives, and got to sit with Midnight Express for a little while. And then I popped over to Under the Pines, one of my grandnephews sings at that drum. And, you know, and it was just so nice to see everybody. You know, to experience what's happening, we really have to be outdoors. And I think that's one of the things that happens on the Nipi walks is people are outside all day. And when they're walking, they're quiet. You know, no earbuds, no, just silence while they walk and carry the water. And you can hear the water in the pail. And you can hear the wind in the trees or the lack of it. And you can hear the birds and, you know, the horses always come running to greet us, and, you know, you can hear them call to you. And, you know, I remember walking through Missouri once, and all of a sudden I came upon probably about 30 feet on the road where there was just dead bees dead on the road. I'm like, what caused that? You know, so when you're outside, you see these things and you can pay attention to them. So that's what we try to do on the water walks, is really connect people with the water. You know, it's not just something that you turn your tap on and you have it. And out here on the farm too, you know, like I have a well. So it's not like in the city where you have this unlimited amount of water flowing from your faucet. And so in the last couple of years, we've had to take water tanks over to, you know, the little fire and department down the road and buy water for the fields. So, you know, the more one can be outside. I wanted to say too that on the water walks, when we ask people to walk in silence, you know, your sensory perceptions are different, right? Because you're walking in silence and you can feel the wind blowing, you can hear everything, and you can also taste things in the air, right? So all your senses are sort of opened up to what's happening in the world. This spring, I've led like a few like small walks already, short walks, couple walks around Como, Little Como Lake in St. Paul, Battle Creek. I have another one around Como. And then August 1st, we're going to walk the Rum River from Lake Mille Lacs to Anoka, to the confluence with the Mississippi, and really looking forward to that.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting my co-host and sister, Leah Lem's chat with Sharon Day. Sharon is enrolled with the Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe, and she serves as the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force.
For those who don't know, do you mind giving just a brief summary of a Nibiwak?
So a Nibiwak, we gather the water at the source, the headwaters. We begin with ceremony. We use sage to cleanse ourselves. We sort of get ourselves in a circle in the order that we're going to walk that day. We offer everybody a sema. People speak for their sema. We talk about the protocols. And then after everyone has spoken for their sema, then we begin. You know, one woman will carry the water and a man will carry the staff. Or if there aren't any men there, then women can carry the staff as well. And they begin. And when they begin that first walk in the morning, you know, we sing the Nibi song. You know, that song says, water, we love you, we thank you, we respect you. And as we sing that song, I tell everybody before we start that, you know, we're carrying the water, but we are the water. You know, every single one of us is composed of, the majority of our bodies is water. And when we lose, like when we've lost over 50% of our body's water, you know, that's when we begin to make that journey to walk on. But while we're here, we are the water. We are water. And so as we're singing to that water that they're carrying, we love you, we thank you, we respect you. We're also sending all of our love with those two people that are walking. And our teachings as Ojibwe people, and I believe all Indigenous people have similar values. If we really practice those seven grandmother, grandfather teachings of being loving, being kind, being generous, you know, being courageous and you know, always being honest and seeking wisdom, we would all always love each other. We wouldn't have to be reminded of that if we actually lived those teachings. And when we say, you know, Nindawemaganiduk, you know, not just talking about the humans in that circle, but we're talking about, you know, the water, the air we breathe, the trees that create the air, the grass, the birds, everything. That's all our relations. And that's who we're greeting, is everything in creation. The seven grandmother, grandfather teachings, they have to be more than placards on a wall. You know, they actually have to be something that we begin to live. You know, me, myself, just about every morning I get up and I give some gratitude for, you know, this beautiful land that I take care of. And, you know, for my four-leggeds and the two-leggeds and the, you know, the chickens and the goats and the dogs. And the longer we're here, the more animals we see. So this year we saw an otter, Wabashashi, a Mukwa. I mean, we see more and more all these animals. And of course we have Wawashkeshi that walk through the land just about every evening. And a lot of people ask me, can I come hunt on your land? And I always tell them, I'm sorry, I love venison as much as anybody, but you know, this is kind of a sanctuary for them. And because, you know, they're safe here, it wouldn't be fair all of a sudden in November to allow somebody to come and shoot them. That's just not fair. So I'm sorry, no. And some people say, well, I'll just use a bow. Well, no. You know, I'm grateful for this land. I'm grateful for the animals. But I also ask every day to be just a little kinder. If I could just be a little kinder, a little more gentle, that's what I ask for myself. Mm-hmm. Just like everybody else, you know, I'm driving to work and that person cuts in front of me and like, what is wrong with you? We all have to practice that, right?
Yes. Yeah, I hear that. That's a good reminder, I think. Sharon, how did you find yourself doing Nibi walks? Was this something that you practiced with another person, or how did this come about?
Well, in 1998, I was initiate into the Madewin Lodge, and the Grand Chief said to all of us, you know, all you Madewins down the cities, go help those Dakota people. They're trying to save the spring. And so I went, and that was about 2.5 years then that I worked with trying to save Camp Coldwater. And what he said to us was, you know, when you're initiate, everything is like hyper, right? You're hyper sensitive to everything. And he said, you know, what would happen if all of the women in the world stood up and said no more? Because women are the life givers, and water is the life giver. And our Ojibwe ways, women are responsible for the water. So I thought to myself, you know, whenever you see pictures around the world of people carrying water, it's always the women. It's always women. And that just stuck with me that, you know, what would happen if all the women of the world said no more? Josephine Mandam and Yvonne, you know, another woman in the lodge, just a little bit older than me, she heard him say that too. She came to the lodge 2003 and said, I want to walk around Lake Superior, carry the water because water has to move to be healthy. And so I want to do that. And so we all agreed with her, and I was fortunate to be able to walk with her then. And then not again until 2011. But in 2011, there was a Four Directions water walk where we brought the water from the four oceans to Lake Superior. And nobody wanted the south from Gulfport, you know, straight up, because, you know, there's no tribes down there. You know, they're all been removed, except for the Mississippi Choctaw. Anyhow, I said I would do that. And I did. And, you know, I'm the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force, and so much of my time is spent dealing with federal and state bureaucracies and foundations and so on and so forth. And to have 43 days, I think that walk took was 43 days, to be outside, not chained to a desk, not flying across the country to some meeting or conference, but just to walk and carry the water every day. You know, that was so incredible. And when we finished that walk, I told Josephine, Vaughn, I want to walk the Mississippi River. And she said, I know that, Sharon. And I said, how did you know that? I just figured it out myself. She said, look at your staff. You carved the Mississippi River on your staff. And indeed I had. So that's how it began. And, you know, sometimes people think that, you know, when somebody does something, you know, that we consider to be extraordinary, we think they had some epiphany or some spiritual something, you know. And for me, it was, I wanted to walk the Mississippi River because it's a river I love. You know, it's the main artery on Nemama Key, and I crisscrossed it every day for 40 years. And in St. Paul, I owned a house in Highland Park, you know, just above the river. And I spent so much time by it. Anyhow, I wanted to do that, so I did it. And then when we finished that, Barb Baker LaRush from LCO said, I think we should walk the Ohio River. And I said, no, let somebody else walk that. She said, it's the biggest polluter of the Mississippi. And I said, yeah, I know that, but, you know, somebody else can do that work. And then we were at a meeting about a month later, and she showed up at that meeting, and she handed me a box, and I opened up the box, and there was an eagle head inside. She said, this is for the staff. You know, I swore at her, and then I cried. And I said, okay, Ohio River, here we come. And after that, you know, then it was one other, St. Louis River, I think, in Minnesota because of the mining issue, and then another river. And then it was finally, okay, this is what I'm going to do until I can't walk anymore. In Josephine, you know, those first walks, I mean, for the first 10 years, you know, she was always available to me by phone, or she would show up, walk in the Missouri River in 2017, and we were eastern Montana, and then seeing this little black car pull up. She had just retraced a migration, right? Started in Duluth and walked all the way to St. Lawrence Seaway. So anyhow, so I'd been walking, it was just probably like the 6th or 7th of August, and we'd been walking about a week or so. And a little black car pulled up, and I got out to see. We didn't expect anybody to be joining us, but I got out to see who it was, and it was Josephine. I said to her, what are you doing here? And she said, I came to support you, Sharon. And that is love. You know, when somebody's just walked 1,000 miles over 2 or 3 months, and then they drive clear cross country to be with you, to support you, that is love. And that's how I felt about her too. I could call her. I remember calling her, and it was in Grand Rapids in Minnesota, and blizzards, snow coming directly into our face. And I called her that night, and I said, could you petition Keewaydin, the north wind? Could you tell the wind to be a little bit more gentle on us? She said, I'll do that right now. In the morning, we woke up, and we headed out, and it was still a blizzard, but the wind was at our back, and there were no cars on the road. It was like the most beautiful day because we didn't have to dodge traffic. Just one other thing about the water, too. When you're carrying the water, I've been walking around this twice now around this little lake in St. Paul, and I noticed each time that the water moved in a different way. You know, when we started the Mississippi walk up by Lake Itasca, it was 7 degrees, and the water froze in a pail that day, but it froze in a circular pattern. You know, the water was moved like that. But on this little lake in St. Paul, both times I've walked it, the water's like moving. Mm. You know, you can almost hear it like glug, glug. I've never heard water and, you know, just sound like that.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting my co-host and sister, Leah Lem's chat with Sharon Day. Sharon is enrolled with the Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe, and she serves as the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force.
Have you been witness then to transformation, whether, you know, little or big, or with yourself or others, as you've done these Nibi walks for the couple decades?
I saw a young woman walk with me for 10 days, and she had been in treatment. Mm-hmm. And she got out and drank that night, and then the next day her mother said, you're going to go walk on this water walk in the center. So she was with me for 10 days. It was kind of a struggle those first couple of days, and at one point, that first night, she told me, she said, I really want a drink, and I have $20 in my pocket, and I could go drinking. And I said, yes, you could, but let me tell you a story and sing you a song. So I did, told her the whole story, sang the song, and she said, okay, I'm going to go to bed, but tomorrow I might drink. And I'm like, okay, fine. Well, she stayed with me for 10 days, and on the 10th day, she ran up ahead of us. We crossed the Mississippi River into Wisconsin, and there was a wayside rest up there, and she ran up ahead of us, and she came running back, and she had this eagle feather in her hand. And she said, look what I found. And I said, look what found you. And she said, it's kind of like me. It's a little battered. And I said, but it's still beautiful. And she said, yes. Anyhow, that was a transformation. And to see her, you know, be this sort of like chip on her shoulder, tough little girl, to be this, it just the tears streaming down her face, you know, look what I found. Hmm. You know, and there have been other things like that. You know, I've seen people walk with me that, gosh, I was afraid they were going to have a heart attack. And, you know, canes, heavy. And then, you know, see them a couple of years later and they're walking without a cane. And I was in South Dakota and this car pulled up ahead of me, kind of a like souped up little, I think it was a Mustang.